Welcome in. It's another episode of RJ Bell's Dream Preview College Basketball Edition. I am AJ Hoffman. He is Griffin Warner at the real underscore G Warner. You can find me at AJ is the real. We are both very real live humans, apparently. And you need to know that when you're on the X. Griffin, how are you, friend?
I'm doing all right. Still feel like a human. I mean, who knows? It changes by the second, it feels like. But definitely not one of those Russian bots, though. Then again, how would anybody know now with ChatGPT and AI?
Exactly.
I mean, who knows if I'm even real? What I do know is real is our 2-0 on best bets last weekend. We were now 55%, I think, tallying them up this entire season as a show, you and I. I don't think I counted Sleepy in there, even though he's 1-0. So give us another extra unit on top of it. So we're making the people money, mm-hmm. And I feel good about that.
We are, and things are going well over at pregame.com. I am now up over 70 units on the season.
Hell yeah.
And we're coming into my favorite time of the year. The old conference championship weeks are upon us.
Start tomorrow.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Those aren't very fun ones, but they're there.
I mean, if it's your favorite week, I think you like them all.
Well, I do. What I don't like is like the bottom of the barrel play-in games, because those are the teams that it's easy for me to kind of handicap the haves versus the have-nots in those leagues. Like, there's two or three good teams or decent teams, and then there's some real garbage. And it's like, oh, good team is at home against one of the garbage teams. This is great. Garbage versus garbage is tough sometimes, and you just got to know who's a little more garbagey. And the real problem with these conferences, with the MEACs and things like that, is it's sometimes very difficult to find information about players and lineups, much more than it is in say the Big Ten or the SEC or something like that. So,
I didn't do a great job of handling injuries this weekend with big teams like Northwestern. So, man, if good luck figuring out who's, I guess, if the point guard's out for Delaware State is your point, I get that. But sheesh, this sport, I mean, I would love if they had NFL style injury reports where you get fined or suspended if you're not on the list.
Yeah, that would be nice, but I don't see that coming anytime soon.
No,
so we've
never,
got
never.
What we've got. All right, let's jump into this week's games. I think we've got some good ones here. Again, we'll do the four biggest games this week, and then we'll hit some best bets at the end. Let's start out in the Big Ten with Purdue at Illinois, and we're going to project Illinois a one-point favorite at home against Purdue. And I guess the simple question is, has Illinois earned that? Has Illinois done enough to now warrant being a favorite on their floor against Zach Edey and Purdue? What are your thoughts?
You know, I'm thinking this is a great matchup, and I think I'm really glad it's happening towards the end of the season where it looks like most teams are healthy. So we can get an idea, or at least there's certain restraining orders in court that are keeping players on the court. We'll, I guess, leave that for another show or another time. But it just seems like a really great matchup. Two teams that are playing really well. Illinois kind of had an up and down, start to the game. I mean, started off okay and then fell behind, I think, by almost maybe double digits before coming back. And really, I think, controlling a Wisconsin team that's, I thought, played pretty well, had a big emotional thing before the game. And so that was like a kind of a weird environment to go into. But Illinois passed with flying colors, I think, as you'd say. Purdue seemed to struggle to separate from Michigan State at home, which is a little bit surprising to me. I just feel like when you're thinking about this matchup, and I was considering making it a best bet, then you mentioned it was going to be one of our top show or top games of the week. And I think it is. So I'm glad we're talking about it in depth. I just don't know how you can bet against Zach Edey, really, if you're not getting an ample amount of points or there's not some really great scenario. At home in Champaign will be great, but I just don't really know how anyone stops him. And the amount of fouls that he draws then puts the rest of this team, who are already like camped out of the three-point line, just taking open threes like they're in practice with no one guarding them. And it's amazing that Purdue went out in the first round last year as a one seed. But I just feel like they are so hard to beat. They're certainly more beatable away from Mackey on the road, and this will be a tough environment for him. I just feel like you go into this game, you bet Illinois, and you're just hoping that Coleman Hawkins can suck Zach Edey away from the basket enough. And I just don't know if he does that enough for me to want to lay a single point or really do anything to play against Purdue unless they're giving me a lot.
So here's my thoughts on this game. I went back and looked at the first matchup, and the things that jumped out at me, one, it was a 5-point win at Purdue. So obviously a respectable performance by Illinois. Of note, Zach Edey played only 23 minutes in that game, spent most of the game in foul trouble, only got to the free throw line three times himself, was 0 of 3 from the line. So 10 points, 15 rebounds, though. A nice day, you know, for a nice normal human day, not quite a nice Zach Edey day, but a solid day. Right. But the most important thing is in that 5-point home win for Purdue, Terrence Shannon didn't play in that game. And man, what that guy has brought to this Illinois team and what they were missing without him, I don't even know if you can quantify it. So this team that has not lost, they've lost one home game in conference play, and it was to Maryland. It was a game where Terrence Shannon didn't play also. So if you say Terrence Shannon-led Illinois has lost one home game this year, and that was the third game of the season against Marquette, and they have just handled business on their home floor since, I tend to think they do it again. I don't think this Purdue team is an unstoppable force, particularly on the road. I mean, they lost at Ohio State, who I don't think is very good. They lost at Nebraska, and it wasn't a particularly close loss at Nebraska. Like, they got blown out at Nebraska, and that was on a day where Purdue hit 13 threes, which I don't think is going to happen every road game. So I like this Illinois team quite a bit. I think this is a good spot to grab them. I'm hoping that, you know, that this comes as like a pick. I don't really want to lay points, but I do think Illinois certainly has a chance to win this game. So I think that's the side I'm interested in.
Yeah, and it's not going to be a lot of points, no matter if Illinois is a favorite here. I think to your point about a lot of points in one sentence, I guess, or a couple sentences back to back. But to your point, as I was saying, I think I don't even know how you count that game, really, because Illinois is just a completely different team without TJ Shannon. And with him, they're way more competent, probably could go in a deep run in March. We'll see. I was very impressed with their performance against Wisconsin. And that game, I mean, if you look deeper into it, Purdue was up 21, never trailed. So all those sort of things. But then I don't even know if you can even think about it, because TJ Shannon wasn't in the lineup. And that completely changes Illinois, who, I mean, to me, they look like they're just going to play one-on-one, whether it's Domask or Shannon or Hawkins. And then they just surround them with some guys that I guess can defend a little bit better than I've expected. Maybe that's a way to explain how good Illinois has been this year versus expectations. But Marcus Domask has been so good, was so good this weekend. And I don't think Purdue really has a great way to stop him.
Yeah, Marcus Domask basically took the lunch money from Tyler Wall over the weekend. If you watch that game, it was impressive to watch. All right, let's get into our next game, and we'll go to the SEC, where it just means more. And Tennessee is at South Carolina. We're going to project Tennessee a 4-point favorite on the road. Tennessee obviously coming off a huge win over the weekend, going to Alabama and getting a 7-point win there. Now, obviously this is a weird spot for them because they played at Alabama. The next game this weekend is home to Kentucky. So you're sandwiching in a couple big games, and you've got this South Carolina road game. Do we think the Vols get a little bit sleepy here, or is South Carolina pedigreed and dangerous enough, you know, having, you know, knocked off some pretty big time opponents this season, that we think we get the best effort from Tennessee?
Hard to say best effort, because back-to-back road performances, hard to get up two times in a row, and this is certainly the smaller of the two games. But I think during the halftime show of that early one, South Carolina against Florida, they were saying that the SEC before the games were played Saturday could end in a 6-way tie for first place. So to me, I think Tennessee will probably still be pretty focused for this one, considering South Carolina was up there and still is up there, potentially fighting them or threatening them, though Tennessee took obviously a huge, huge step to winning the SEC title this weekend in Tuscaloosa. Now, I think South Carolina, this is going to be a nice chance for us to get really an idea of who they are. Huge comeback against Florida this weekend, was at home, and this will be at home, so that's a huge back-to-back, but it might be hard for them to get and really show off those two really great performances in back-to-back games. But crowd seems to be pretty lit in South Carolina right now. Darius Rucker will surely be there, probably singing songs at halftime or something. But I don't really know what it would take for me to be against Tennessee here. We're expecting them a favorite, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to look at -4 on the road.
Yeah, I feel like that's a – there's a fair – so we're entering the time of year where there's a lot of, like, decent-sized numbers where the lose and cover possibilities are a lot more prevalent. And I think at home you got to look that way. That would probably be my if I have to make a pick on this game. But I think most people that listen to this podcast for as many years as we've been doing it know that I'm not really a road favorite type. So that was probably obvious to all of you. Thank you for your support. But I'm going to be looking pretty deeply at South Carolina to try to find some flaws that might be able to keep me away from this one. Cause I think you were saying it earlier this year that you didn't really believe in South Carolina very much. I think they've been better than anyone expected. But we're still trying to figure out what that level or what their level actually is. Cause they're pretty deep, but they've got to kind of a lot of nobodies that, and I'm not saying that to slight them, but there's no main star. There's no Dalton Connect. They can bail you out of tough situations. So maybe that's good as a collective. Hard to shut that down or shut that water off if it's coming from multiple directions. But I think it's going to be a really tough game and a good measuring stick for South Carolina before we get into the SEC tournament. And then now the NCAA tournament, which I don't think anyone was expecting coming into this year.
I don't think so either. I think the reason why Tennessee will be fully focused here is South Carolina is the team that went into Knoxville and beat them.
True.
And that's the only time it's happened this year. I'm certain they want to avenge that. It was a 63-59 South Carolina win. And honestly, it was the last time that the Tennessee offense, and how do I say the last time? Maybe the only time this season, other than, I mean, there may be in some non-conference games, but in conference play, their offense has dominated most of the games that they've played. That was the last time their offense really struggled. Everyone not named Dalton Connect really struggled. They had 59 points as a team. Dalton Connect had 31 of them. So he had a pretty good day, but the rest of the team just didn't back him up. And I don't know. I feel like I'm with you that it feels like back-to-back road games, this feeling like the lesser of the two road games makes me not, you know, want to run to the window and back the Vols here. But I've said this for a couple pods in a row now. I'm starting to believe in this team, and I'm starting to see like the potential of this team is pretty damn good. And sweeping Alabama, I think, tells you something. Like the idea that they could go on that road trip and win that game probably makes them feel like they can go anywhere and win. So I think I'm interested in Tennessee. I'll need probably a little bit better number to back them. I probably won't want to lay outside of a possession, and I might, you know, which means I'll probably end up passing, because if this touches three, awesome, but I highly doubt that it does. So
yeah,
we'll probably just be a watch and learn.
Yeah, Tennessee, I think, probably shoots higher than 24% from three, 5 of 21 in that matchup. South Carolina made 10 threes on the road, not at a great percentage, but that was enough to get it done. I think we probably see those fortunes change. Then we really get to see if South Carolina, which should face a pretty rugged interior, which is usually what they're usually bossing people around inside, and I don't think they'll be able to do that against Tennessee a second time after they beat them the first time in Knoxville.
This is going to be a challenge for us, this game. We're looking at Marquette home to Creighton, and we're going to go with UConn -2. And the reason why I say this is a challenge is I bet against Marquette this weekend and had some success. I would have bet a lot more had I known that both Igodoro and Kolick would be out. and they both were, and it was just a skeleton crew for Marquette. And I mean, to be honest, I give them a lot of credit because they hung in that game a lot longer than I thought they would be.
Well,
able to.
I thought, yeah,
it was
exactly.
Like the last 10 minutes, you could tell everyone was exhausted. It's not an ultra deep team anyway. And they were just beat up. I mean, Cam Jones was trying to put things on his back and carry it. And it just, it was a lot to ask. David Joplin played a good game as well, but Creighton just a little bit too much. Now we have to look at this Marquette team, who this is obviously a great spot. They're coming off a loss on the road. Now they get a huge home game, revenge on the mind after being embarrassed at UConn. The question is, like, is there any way you can back Marquette without knowing what the status is for those two guys? Now, the assumption is Oso is going to be fine because he missed this game with a non-COVID illness. I mean, if he's still sick 4 days later, then, boy, we're really into some deep trouble. But the Kolek thing is more concerning, in my opinion, because they're saying it's like an oblique injury, so basically not something that's going to heal quickly and not something you can just wrap a splint around. I mean, this is a core issue, which even if he does play means he will be limited and he probably won't have the cardio that you'd hope he has. Is the question marks around this team enough to steer you away from them? Or do you think the spot warrants maybe taking a stab with Marquette?
No, I think at this point in the season, not to reference Northwestern again, but when you're missing key players at this point, like the rotations have been solidified for a long time. I don't think there's a lot of change that's going in there. So people are pretty used to like the human, I think race is very interested in cycles and things they're used to doing. And I think the rotation of a basketball team when we're March 3rd recording this for games on March 4th, I don't want to mess with that kind of being out of whack. I thought Marquette, as you mentioned, played a great game. And honestly, we're in there. And I think probably making anyone backing Creighton, even with really nice prices, probably very nervous because
I had
like that whole game was closed.
I had four and I was nervous. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I think they're down six at the end or late in the game, went for two steals and left Baylor Shireman open for threes that he converted. And so six went to 12 and that was kind of all she wrote. But I was expecting I saw the final score and then I went back and watched the game afterwards. So I was expecting it to be not close throughout and just kind of a beating. It wasn't that. But now UConn, who didn't just have to play Creighton, nor was it on the road. I think they're in a really good position to go into Marquette. And like Kolek last year, when he missed was playing, but was clearly not himself against Michigan State. And I think really they struggled in the NCAA tournament, with Vermont, a 15 seed in that first round game. But I mean, their points of possession was like below 90 out of 100. So like they were really, really struggling offensively. I think it's going to be one of those games that you want to look to some Cam Jones over props for points scored. If those are out there, that might be something worth doing, higher or lowers, whatever. I've definitely looked to hires on those, but I think Iguodaro will come back. I think that's helpful, but I think he's unfortunately nowhere near as important as Tyler Kolek. So, and I imagine if you're missing and this game and potentially not even making the trip to Creighton, you're probably not playing against UConn. It's probably not even worth risking it. I think you're going to take a couple losses and then try to get healthy in the Big East tournament. And then hope that he can come back to some sort of, I guess, version of himself in the first round of the NCAA tournament. It's going to be a long layoff for him. And I feel like it reminds me a lot of Marcus Sasser, who I was struggling to think of the name on the last episode we did. I don't feel like this is a really good omen for Marquette going forward. And it's really a shame.
Yeah, it's hard to want to back them just because of that health situation. And man, I almost played Seton Hall today here on Sunday against UConn, and it looked like it would have been a really good bet. I was kicking myself a little for about 10 minutes of the game, and then UConn hit the turbos, and they were gone. And it was the exact same thing we saw in when they played Villanova last weekend. The exact same thing when they played Marquette the weekend before. I mean, it's what they're doing right now. It's a scary team to get in the way of. So unless it's the perfect situation, and this Marquette, you know, these personnel issues make it not a perfect situation, I think that I am going to be sitting out of this one. Although I don't think I'm going to be betting against Marquette either. And if those guys are announced out, I think there actually might be some value on Marquette. Because I'm assuming the number would move pretty handily.
Maybe, but I'm just so concerned. Like, let's say Godaro plays. I think that's the most likely scenario. But I guess in your example, if you're saying they become a 6-point underdog because Kolek and Godaro are both still right. out. Supposedly Ross was also under the weather, and who knows if that spreads to the rest of the team. Like, it's not a great scenario. I just feel like you need to be at your full best to compete with Connecticut. And unfortunately, UConn games, Danny Hurley's going out there for blood. I feel like he's remembering things that were said about him like 27 years ago, whether they're relevant to this UConn team or not. He probably hadn't even thought of coaching UConn at that point, but he's finding bulletin board material. And I feel like you could easily get blown out by this UConn team, even at full strength. So less than that, I think you look far away.
All right, let's go to the Big 12 for our last game and talk about BYU at Iowa State. We're going to project the Cyclones as about a 6-point favorite here. BYU, I think they opened some eyes with that Kansas win. And, whatever you think of, Kevin McCullough and his value to that team, and obviously I think he's very, very important. What they did was impressive no matter what. And for them it was a close game almost, till the last 5-10 minutes, and BYU just really put them away. And it's a very hard thing to do, very tough place to do it. But a huge win for BYU that probably gave them quite a bit of confidence. They've been kind of Jekyll and Hyde on the road. They have a couple wins that you go, okay, that's a solid, like they won at West Virginia pretty handily, and West Virginia is not good, but that's always a tough road trip. Obviously this Kansas data point is huge, but then they also got blown out at Oklahoma State. They got blown out at Oklahoma. Those are concerning. Like, if you're not competitive against those teams, how can we expect you to compete against Iowa State? Iowa State is playing some really good ball. 7 of the last 8 they've won. The only loss in that mix, road loss at Houston. And they have not lost a home game this season. They've got home wins over Houston, home win over Kansas, a home win over TCU. They're just taking care of business at home. This is their last home game, which means it is senior night. I think Trey King and Curtis Jones are probably like the Robert Jones, the seniors. Although who knows what senior night is now anymore? These guys might play two more years.
Good luck counting that. Yeah,
but do you trust what BYU's done lately? Does that Kansas win give you any extra faith in them, or is having that Iowa State defense in their face going to be just too much for them to overcome?
I would have said that. I mean, we broke down BYU Kansas and said there's going to be a ton of threes, and that's going to like play exactly into BYU's hands. And if they make them, they can win this game. I don't know that I actually believed that, but I think we were pretty right on the nose that the opportunities were going to be there. I think pretty much any game, if you want to launch threes and you just keep backing up further and further, you can take them. And if they go in, you are very hard to beat. We've seen that's how most upsets happen in the NCAA tournament going back years and years and years. Now it seems everyone shoots threes, but BYU takes that to the largest extreme possible. I think it's another great scenario, great recipe for Iowa State to have trouble, because they want to really be physical with you and close off the interior. BYU doesn't really care about going inside. So, I mean, it feels like a similar matchup to me to what KU just kind of offered to BYU. I imagine that Iowa State is probably going to be a lot more defensively minded, because that's exactly what the team is. That's what TJ Otzelberger has done ever since he's been at Iowa State. And I think it's why he's overachieved so much. I'm still in a position with Iowa State where I think they're really good defensively. I still question what they are offensively. And basically this Momchilovic, their freshman recruit from Wisconsin that seemed to get out of a bunch of other bigger hands and went to Ames of all places, because I guess that was Otzelberger's biggest target, and he was calling him or doing whatever was allowed every day, or talking to him as much as he could. I just feel like BYU is a team full of Momchiloviches, and yeah, they don't play defense as well, but they're going to really make it hard on Iowa State to get rebounds. This is going to be, I think, a slower paced game because BYU is going to be so focused on keeping Iowa State off of the offensive glass that I don't know that I want to look under because BYU raining threes could be really problematic for it. But I think it does allow BYU to hang in a game where I'm not expecting Iowa State to score much. And if BYU shoots a decent percentage from three, not even great, I think they're in this game. And then, as you said, maybe make a few late and they could potentially win it. Now, what were you saying with the spread you're expecting this week?
I'm just expecting Iowa State minus six.
Yeah, I mean, that's big enough that they're – I mean, it's a danger zone with fouling and stuff. But you're also trading two free throws for a three-point shot. And I think if there's any team in America you could trust to maybe hang around a number late, of course, I'm jinxing it while I say it out loud now, but I think it's BYU.
I generally agree. And I think that this BYU team, what I like about them, and I think when Iowa State, it's a lot like Houston. When Iowa State really gives teams trouble is when they force a bunch of turnovers. And BYU protects the ball. Like one through five, they all handle the ball pretty decently. And that's a rare thing. And if they can avoid turnovers, I mean, obviously, like you said, if a game's within reach, even if it's not in reach, you know, three threes in a row suddenly make a blowout look like it's a game. And BYU is as capable as anyone of doing that. So I tend to think that they can hang around this number. I don't see any reason why. I think we saw in the Kansas game. What it really boiled down to was Hunter Dickinson was just out of gas, like 6 of 15 from the free throw line. That basically cost them the game. But and I think they're going to continue to be exhausted until McCullough's back and maybe even goes into the tournament because they've played so long without him. And we've talked about their lack of depth to begin with. But I think this is a game where you've got a couple guys who I trust to take care of the ball in Spencer Johnson and Dallin Hall. And like we said, just guys who everybody's got a chance to shoot the ball and they don't care if you're going to take away the paint. That's what Iowa State does defensively. They say, not here, buddy. And BYU says, okay, come out here. Then you better do something. So I think this is actually a pretty good matchup for the Cougs as well. All right, let's get to best bets, Griffin. Before we do, tell the people how they can save it pregame.
Use the promo code RIVAL20, RIVAL like it would normally be spelled all across the English language, no matter where you're speaking it from, RIVAL20, good for 20% off all listeners of this college basketball podcast, good for 7 days from this podcast release, and this will be, I guess, the Sunday night into Monday episode, so you have till the 11th of March, but we're going to be deep in conference tournaments at that point, so go check out some season-long packages that are running, I think, through the end of the basketball season. I think there's NBA stuff as well. I am not really someone that touches that sport, I will admit. I barely have enough time to sleep as it is, but use that promo code RIVAL20, get for 20% off, and you can use it to buy anything on the pregame.com website, and go make sure you do it now. There's also baseball coming up. I'm sure plenty of UFC stuff for AJ coming off every weekend, and of course, we have the beautiful soccer that is currently dominating my life currently. So RIVAL20, good for 20% off.
All right. I will let you go first because I've got a Thursday game. Where are you headed for your best bet?
Okay. I'm going to stay in that Big East. And I think there's some payback in the minds of Seton Hall at this point. And I also feel like in a lot of times in these two bubble teams that play each other, usually the thing that the conference wants to have happen, especially after Villanova won one of these exact bubble games at Providence this weekend. I think the Big East probably and the rest of teams trying to get in as many as possible in the NCAA tournament would say that they want Villanova to win this one. But I don't think 13 of 23 from three is happening again. And they've shot very well their last two outings against Georgetown and Providence. But I don't think that two times in a row they're able to extend that to a third. I think Seton Hall, they're projecting them as a 1-point favorite at home to Villanova, play up to -3, probably even -4. I feel like those numbers are pretty similar at this point. Basically, you're backing Seton Hall to win and hoping to dodge some late weird stuff to happen if they would somehow win by a margin less than a spread at four or less. But I just don't really believe in Villanova. I don't think you have either this whole season, but they're coming off a good performance. And I just don't think that Villanova is able to put back-to-back and in really tough back-to-back road environments. And then they got Creighton last at home, which could be a season saver or a bid saver. So we'll see what happens. Villanova's been up and down this year, but I like Seton Hall as a home favorite and a slight one at that.
I don't disagree with that at all. I think, you know, obviously Seton Hall getting blown out today, as I was mentioning, they're a bubble team and they're obviously needing a win to, and obviously UConn would have been, they would have got him in certainly, but I think this win could put them over the hump, and especially considering Villanova is a team they're competing with. Although Villanova seems to be inching closer and closer off of the bubble right now, I think it'd be a huge win for the Pirates. All right, I'm going to go out to the Big West on Thursday, and I'm going to go with something that's worked a couple times for me on this pod this year, and it's UC San Diego at home. We're going to project them a 9-point favorite at home against UC Davis. And here's what I like about, first of all, UC San Diego is just a juggernaut at home. They've lost one home game all season. They've lost zero home games in conference play. And UC Davis, when you go to KenPom and you stack rank the teams in the Big West, UC Davis has the third best record in the Big West. They're in third place in the conference. But when you stack rank the team by, you know, the analytics rankings and you say, okay, well, how good is this team really? They're the sixth best team in this conference. So I think you're getting a little bit of value because UC San Diego is they're in second place. And by the metrics, they are the second best team just behind UC Irvine, although they did beat Irvine this season as well. So I think this UC San Diego team is for real. I think they're so well coached. What Eric Olin's done there is really incredible in just a short time in D1 for this team to have 20 wins right now. I think it's just every win that you're stacking on here that makes this like a historic season for your program. And like I said, I think UC Davis, probably a little bit overrated, has been a bit fortunate, I'd say, so far this season. So I'm going to look at UC San Diego, the Tritons, getting getting a double digit win over UC Davis. All right.
Yeah. And you can say, if you haven't touched UC San Diego before, you can say, I bet a team with a nickname that no one else has. At least I haven't seen a Tritons other team across this country.
I think they're the only ones. And UC Davis, they're Aggies. Everybody's Aggies. Utah State, Texas.
Yeah. We've all lost bets on the Aggies.
Yeah. Trust me. All right. That'll do it for another episode. The next time you hear from us, we'll be in the middle of conference tournaments, so we might try and figure out something unique we can do for the pod and maybe get an extra pick or two you guys way while we're doing this. But obviously keep an eye out on Twitter, and of course you can get all the stuff that we post over at pregame.com. Griffin, great job as always. Enjoy the games this week, and to all of you out there, thank you for listening, and best of luck on your wagers.